Peace and love. Peace and love.
Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
You know what I am? I'm a housewife that figured it out.
Wow, 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 wow!
And now, here's the host of Good Things Radio, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio, episode number 122. Well, hello. I actually had to go back and see what number we were on because it feels like it's been that long. Hello, friends. My name is Brooke Taylor. It is great to be back with you on the show. Thank you for joining me. This is an Advent podcast. This is an episode talking about the Holy Land, the pilgrimage, just re-entering. And in some ways, I feel like I'm starting new all over again, starting fresh. It is a new year of sorts, with liturgically speaking, kicking off a new calendar, but also in my spirit, there's a newness that I have to say. And it is kind of challenging, believe it or not. How do I put into words what is wordless? How do I harness and distill down something as vast as the universe? And I know that I'm sounding dramatic here, but I'm telling you, that's the experience going on in my spirit as I just returned from the Holy Land on my very first trip to Israel. And although I've done a lot of other pilgrimages, trips in different parts of the world, nothing quite compares to this particular journey that we took. And the state of my heart is just really hard to explain. So I had a couple thoughts, and it was nice over the weekend, had a chance to talk to my producer in person, Mark Cumming, about this. And just, do we do one long Holy Land episode and talk about the pilgrimage, devote the whole entire show to the experiences of Israel and Jerusalem and the Sea of Galilee, Tiberias, Masada, the Dead Sea, the Jordan River, Jericho, all these places? Or is it better to just kind of unpack and share over time? So what I've decided is to break it up into two parts, because there's just a lot from the prep and the planning, what I learned to pack for a trip like this, to the actual travel portion and the spiritual parts. And what we did as a group, I believe, sets our pilgrimage apart from other trips. I've heard about other trips. I have friends who do pilgrimages, but this one was unique, and that alone could be a show. And then my own observation and journal entries and reflections. So it's just not possible for me to do, I don't think, a good job with one small 30-minute program. And to do any more than that, it gets long for me and my ADD self. So what we're going to do is a part one and a part two, a bonus, which I think you're really going to want to hear, because in part two, that's where the highlight, I could just tell you right now, of the entire trip for me was when I was, along with four other people on our pilgrimage, locked inside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre overnight. And I'll share why that happened and what exactly happened there in the part two recap, so you don't want to miss that. Also, of course, it is Advent. And how is your season going so far? I can't believe that we are moving through already so close to Christmas. And it seems in so many ways that we prepare months for this little snippet of time. And then it just kind of falls through our fingers when it actually comes. So I would love to hear how your Advent is going so far. You are living Advent hour by hour, day by day. One of our fantastic listeners to the program actually has a great book to recommend. It's going to be in the favorite things. And so I want you to take a listen to what he has to say as well. So let's get started.
St. Therese with her roses, God's words when it's written, bright kids in church shirts and sunny beach sitting. Big runs on pavement and stretching out hamstrings. These are a few of my favorite things.
It's Mark Moorhead. I just wanted to respond to your invitation to share a few of my favorite things. And I do have a favorite thing heading into Advent. It is a book that was recommended by my spiritual director. It's called The Read of God, and it's by Carol Houselander. It's a modern classic, and I was just reading the introduction today as I get ready to read the actual book for Advent, and I wanted to share something that just blew me away. This is about Mary, and it's talking about how none of the saints are as good for us to imitate as Mary. And while we might think, gosh, there's nothing to hold on with her, there is nothing to grasp when it comes to her. The Gospels say so very little about her, and she seems so perfect. Check this out. I'm going to read just a little segment from the intro here. It says, "But it is Our Lady and no other saint whom we can really imitate. All the canonized saints had special vocations and special gifts for their fulfillment. Presumption for me to think of imitating Saint Catherine or Saint Paul or Saint Joan if I have not their unique character and intellect, which indeed I have not. Each saint has his special work, one person's work. But Our Lady had to include in her vocation, in her life's work, the essential thing that was to be hidden in every other vocation, in every life. She is not only human, she is humanity. And the one thing that she did and does is the one thing that we all have to do, namely, to bear Christ into the world. Christ must be born from every soul, formed in every life. And if we had a picture of Our Lady's personality, we might be dazzled into thinking that only one sort of person could form Christ in himself, and we should miss the meaning of our own being. Nothing but things essential for us are revealed to us about the Mother of God, the fact that she was wed to the Holy Spirit and bore Christ into the world. Our crowning joy is that she did this as a lay person and through the ordinary daily life that we all live, through natural love made supernatural, as the water at Cana was, at her request, turned into wine." That just struck me as so beautiful and so wonderfully true, that it is Mary, above all, whom we should imitate in terms of the purely human level, right? Besides Christ, but Mary is the one who does the simple thing, which is give Christ to everyone. And she did it as a lay person, something I don't know how I missed all this time, thinking of her as so elevated that, gosh, she's one of us in every way. And I just thought that that was most fitting to share with your show and your listeners. I hope you can use that. And gosh, The Read of God by Carol Hauslander. I think it's going to be a fantastic read. And what a great read for Advent. Take care. God bless. Bye.
Wow. Okay. Thank you so much, Mark. And you know what's interesting about that message is the timing of that. See, this is what is so cool about technology. Even though I was staying in Tiberias, that's where we started our pilgrimage in Israel, and overlooking the Sea of Galilee, which is really surreal. I would just have to like pinch myself. You're actually seeing this. You're here. And my Voxer went off when I woke up one morning, and it was this message. It was Mark leaving a message about this book. And so it was neat because the timing of it was so beautiful in that I was able to carry that message with me in my heart. And then when we were in Bethlehem, we were there at the Church of the Nativity on the first Sunday of Advent. And so I was able to take that quote that he read by Carol Hauslander and read it, which isn't that so fantastic? And I actually read it again at the Choose Joy Luncheon, just because I think as he zeroed in on, that's the keystone right there. That, for me, is a foundational message as we walk through Advent. So thank you. And that book, again, it's called The Read of God. I ordered it. I haven't read it. It hasn't arrived yet, but my husband was kind enough to order that for me, kind of an early Christmas present. It was actually written over a half century ago, so you may be familiar with it by now, but I wasn't. So thank you so much to Mark for a fantastic find. Also, I want to mention Mark has a podcast. His program is called The Catechast. So it's CATECAST, just kicking it off, but he is a brilliant mind. And so you can check it out again. It's called The Catechast. Thank you so much to Mark. Wow. Okay. So where do I start? In promoting this trip, one of the quotes I said, and I don't even remember now who said it, but was that you should not take a trip. You should allow the trip to take you. And I didn't realize when I put that quote out there for everyone that that would really be my own experience with this particular trip. And I don't know that I would say that for every pilgrimage that I've taken, but I think sometimes even things like a really intense retreat, you almost need to be in like this holy hyperbaric re-entry chamber before you go back into society, because Our world moves so fast, and whether it's just getting right, especially, I'll be honest, as a mom, but that's just my experience. I'm sure my husband could say a similar thing, where you are in charge of so much. And so when you get back into your regular scheduled programming, everything just without a pause continues to keep rolling. And I noticed that too, when there's been a traumatic loss or death, whether it's been in my own family or someone close to me, where you just look around and you think, how can the world just keep on spinning and nothing's changed? Like everything, the news headlines keep on ticking out, and you feel like you've been suspended outside of time. And so it's kind of a really weird brain adjustment, at least for me. And a jolt to the system, like a shock, just to resume life as usual. And when you look at astronauts, like they, when they, this is, I know it's a stretch, but this is how I feel. When astronauts come back, you know, they go through like a physical readjustment. They feel dizzy, like their bodies are much heavier. I've read this, obviously, I don't know, but because of the anti-gravity, it's hard to just like hit the ground running. And so I feel in a spiritual way, I guess, to be able to compare it to that, because in trying to conceptualize what I would say about the trip, I found it really difficult to figure out what I want to say in cohesive sound bites, just as I think I would if I would have gone to the moon or down to the bottom of the sea. Like, what you see and how you experience it is so, I don't really have an experience to latch onto that I could put words to explain it. And people told me this would happen. My really good friend Jen, Father Nathan, and they said, you're either going to cry the whole time, or you're going to be in awe, or you're going to go through moments where you just have this astonishment. And they were right. And I have to say, though, it didn't start that way. It almost took me a few days before I even felt anything on this trip because, and I guess we'll just start there. We had 18 people on our trip from all over the country, from Oklahoma to Laredo, Texas, to Indiana, to Florida. We could not have asked for a more close, tight-knit group. There really was very little drama. Everybody got along. And I think one of the most difficult aspects of the trip is actually the traveling and getting there. And by the time you're settled, you're just so exhausted. And that was definitely the case for us because we were traveling over 30 hours. So you just know it's going to be a marathon. I mean, there's a lot of adrenaline. You're excited, but I'm not someone that travels very well on an airplane. It's loud. There's something in my body that like is very alert and I can't relax. Plus I'm not comfortable. I know they make the most amazing neck pillows, but I have not found good luck with that yet. So they have great movies. So I was able to prepare for that. But one of the things, we went from our long flight was JFK to Tel Aviv. And one of the things that I noticed that I thought was interesting was I don't remember exactly if it's at sunrise or the particular times that the Jews pray. But in this flight, that's what happened. It wasn't like an alarm or a bell went off, but they all knew at the same time to get up, and they had their prayer shawls on. They had their holy books, and they would get up and they would face where there's a partition in the plane with the different sections. And they would each take turns kind of leaning against the wall and praying. And right there, I think, struck me as we began the pilgrimage, as I looked at them and I thought, is this my Lord? Because Jews to me are a little bit intimidating only because I seek to know more about their faith, about the law, about the Torah, and about what they believe. I know a little bit as a layperson, but then I haven't studied a whole lot. But Jesus Christ, my Lord and my beloved, he was an observer of the law. He was an observant Jew. And so then as I looked at these men, I thought, well, would that have been Jesus? He did pray. He did observe. He was obedient. Even though in my mind, I just think of him as wearing a tunic, having sandals, walking along the hills and the shores of Galilee, healing people in Capernaum and all the different things that he did. And so that for me was the first step of me looking for my Lord.
Thank you.
as we traveled with our tour guide, and he began to kind of fill us in on the political landscape of what was going on, and the Palestinians and the Arabs and the Arab Christians and the Jews and the Zionists and all the differences, and the Muslims, and cohabitating in a way that isn't always easy, and kind of squished in the middle are the Christians. And then you hear all the different languages. And then we were encountering at these different places. The first day that we were there, it was on the shore of Galilee, the Church of the Primacy of Peter, where Jesus came, the resurrected Christ, when he made breakfast for his disciples. And they were in the boat, and he called to them from the shore to cast their net on the other side. And then they recognized by the fruits of what they were receiving in these fish that it is the Lord. And that's when Peter tucked in his tunic and he jumped into the water and he swam. And he said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." And then three times total, he said, "Do you love me?" And he said, "Feed my sheep." And that was such a powerful experience to be there the first day, the first Mass, as a group, all gathered. It's also a place where other pilgrims come of different traditions. Now, that's the beauty of being Catholic, is in all these places, we are able to receive Jesus in the Holy Eucharist, to receive him there in Cana, to receive him there in Bethlehem and at Calvary. We were also seeing really passionate Pentecostals that were kind of going into rapture and falling down, and each in their own tradition, searching for Jesus, finding Jesus, encountering Jesus, but that expression was so different in languages that I didn't understand and in ways that I wouldn't have necessarily. There was at one point, I know that I'm jumping all over, but when we were in Nazareth, we were waiting to go into the synagogue. And the synagogue was where Jesus was essentially rejected by his own people. And then he had to go and flee. And when we went in the synagogue, we walked into a room where there was obviously something major going on before we got in those doors, because these people were getting up off the floor. They were sweating. They were wiping tears from their eyes. Their clothes were disheveled. For me, it was really, I'll be honest, it was kind of unsettling, because I thought, what is going on in here? But they were having some sort of Pentecostal service. And then you think about the Spirit and being slain in the Spirit. And I'm thinking, but my same Lord and this same Spirit, does it respond to me differently? Do I respond to the Holy Spirit differently than you do? I mean, there's just so much in one place that for me, it's not all sinking in. Like, I can't quite absorb it all, and my senses can't take it all in. But I wrote a little journal about that in this particular part, whereas I'm explaining all of these things happening at once, that was processing in my spirit. And this is what I wrote. I just said, "I'm trying to step into the world of my beloved, yet I feel foreign. These people, this land, it seems so far from home and all that is familiar. The people of Israel intimidate me. I wonder if this is how Jesus felt, caught between laws and tradition, an obedient son, a miracle worker and healer, never appreciated, save only for a select few. Can I find my Redeemer in this place, among dark-skinned, bearded men with customs I do not understand, and in such a primitive time with language that I cannot comprehend? It is a matter of faith. Here, I see others on the same quest, Africans, Chinese, cultures, diverse backgrounds of believers. I see the Jews who reject the teachings of Christ wholly, the Muslims who respect Jesus and venerate Mary but give no weight to Christ's messianic fulfillment, Protestants who fall into rapture and become slain in the Spirit, Arabs who claim their inheritance but still seem quite different than the faith that I have come to practice and live." So that was the interior movement of my spirit on the first leg of the journey, we'll say. I felt uncomfortable, and I thought, there's nowhere in the world that I should feel more at home than this place. But it is foreign. It's the Middle East. And yet, you're also transported back into time. I don't think I expected it to be so beautiful. There were so many places that were stunning. Mount Tabor was absolutely breathtaking. The Mount of Temptation is over in an area near Jericho, and that is just beyond beautiful.
Mavatza, welcome.
The desert is beautiful, but yet it's also, again, it's really intimidating. And that leads me to the next leg of the trip. I journaled again as we did travel from Tiberias and the Sea of Galilee region. And by the way, I could park on that leg of the trip for about 20 minutes and talk about going on a boat and this fantastic voyage that we took. It wasn't very long, but we took a little boat ride on the Sea of Galilee, and they played music and they taught us how to dance in the custom of that era. They did a little net toss that you could kind of see how they would have maybe caught fish, because we don't, at least me, encounter that kind of environment very much. So There is something that happens to your senses with the salty air, the landscape of where these miracles took place. And I can't remember if I shared before I left on the trip, but there was a book that I was able to find and really love, I ran across, called The Fifth Gospel. And it talks about how the fifth gospel is the land itself. And when you go there, all the other gospels are open to you, because you're able to open the pages with your eyes and ears, your heart and your mind, your spirit engaged and locked in to these particular places. Even though it was centuries ago, you see so much of it remains the same in terms of the basic elements, the sun, the moon, the mountains, the water. And that's what's so extraordinary about it all. So Mount Tabor was awesome. And then we went on and we took this beautiful drive and went to the Jordan River. And that day we renewed our baptismal promises. And then we went to Jericho, which was interesting, but I'm going to pick up there at Jordan. So I said, today we journeyed out to the desert, to the Jordan River. What a fascinating landscape. We left the fertile Sea of Galilee and the region of Tiberias for the dusty, arid desert. The cows were emaciated, the political landscape perpetually braced for conflict. Yet, at the Jordan River, I encountered an oasis of peace. In this barren place, a spring of new life. Brother John Michael Paul's blessing and meditation gave voice to my own heart and stirred something even deeper. This physical place is where the heavens opened and the universe was never the same, a fulfillment. Here, with my mother, I feel a holy pride. She, after all, is who led me to this place. As we encountered many faith traditions, Jew, Muslim, secular, I've never been more proud of where I came from. I am a Christian, a follower of the Galilean Liberator, the rabbi from Nazareth. I received this faith, passed down from a long line of faithful women and men, my mother and my father. For a long time, I felt a vague sense that I was part of something, but never really defined it. I just floated along in the general noise of life. Yet here, I know that I am part of the Christian faith, and through the graces conferred at baptism, called to respond to that faith. In those waters, I felt called to recommit to my calling, my vocation as wife and mother, which I can only fully do when I have attended, first of all, to God. If you've been to the Arise Retreat, you know this sounds familiar, because every time, at least for the past 2 years of the retreat that I've been there, this is what I enter into on day one, that reminder. And here it came in full force again. Okay, it is not necessary to be absorbed in the news of the world, news of my town, or objects and events that numb my true priorities. In the desert, everything else is stripped away. It is there we are free to hear God. It struck me now that we are halfway through our trip. Last week, we were preparing for the weekend, packing, prep, getting ready to leave, and how time gets away from us. Yet it also stretches back through time and forward to eternity. But here, we are detoxing from our present era to absorb the living pages of the past. We have received the Eucharist in Tiberias, near the Sea of Galilee, in Cana, today in Jerusalem. We have entered into the mystery of all the people who received Jesus century after century in the land we now walk in. And these are similar thoughts that I had going to Italy as well, and traveling back with that experience. And one thing that I thought was interesting, and I'm going to play the audio of it here, is We all know one of the most common questions when I shared about the Holy Land that people asked was, are you afraid? Are you afraid to go to the Middle East? Are you scared to go to Israel in a time of ongoing unrest? And I had done my research and talked to people that I trusted so much, like Jeff Cavins and Father Nathan, that I really felt at peace. But I also recognized that this was a tough trip to try to convince people. And when we were there, I got to be honest, it really was kind of a wake-up call with me in terms of the Islamic infiltration. And I don't even want to say infiltration because it's really not anything new. I mean, going back to the Crusades, that became very real. Like, for instance, when you go to Jericho, so many of these loudspeakers mounted on these minarets that five times a day are used, not only for the call to prayer, but for preaching and converting the infidel to Islam. It was very unsettling, I'll be honest. As a Westerner, I wasn't necessarily prepared for that. And we had gone in Jericho to a Franciscan church and monastery. It was really nice. One of the priests there, the brothers, Father John Michael Paul knew, and he ended up going to lunch with us and was so fantastic. But he even shared how difficult it is to tune it out when it penetrates through the windows and through the church. And we were at Mass in Bethlehem at the Church of the Nativity. And you just heard this voice inside the windows and inside the stone church. The velocity and the volume of this was hard to tune out. And in that case, we sang really loud. We were singing and we were able to muffle the noise. But then when we were in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the same thing. We were overlooking the city when we were there in the Mount of Olives, and we were there at the same place where Jesus wept. And you are looking and you see the Dome of the Rock, which is now, that's an Islamic building. It's a mosque, their most holy place, this rock where the Jews believe the foundation of the earth began, and Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac there. And you hear, as we were there on the Mount of Olives contemplating, this Muslim call to prayer. So it was everywhere. And I wanted to have you listen to the audio of us in Jericho. This is really quick. I was just recording as we were walking to the monastery, and you can hear on the street how loud it sounds. Take a listen. That was a point of contemplation for me, especially in Jerusalem, because you've got all these different faith traditions cohabitating, living for the most part peacefully as best they can. But then as we were at the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall, you heard again this loudspeaker, the Muslim prayer, right over the wall. And it never dawned on me, I guess, just what an intrusive religion Islam is. And I'm not trying to be inflammatory. I'm just saying that if it was the Jewish prayer, if it was Catholic rosary that was being piped into every corner of the city five times a day, that's a hard thing to just kind of tune out. And one of the things that our guide told us was that the Muslims in the Middle East are very often not the same that we might find in the United States. One of our ladies, one of our pilgrims, her driver is Muslim. Her cleaning lady is Muslim, and they're really good friends. And she was taking issue, feeling like, you know, you're trying to pit one against the other, or you're not being very tolerant. But he said, you know, the Muslims here, many, most, can't speak for everyone, are much more extreme. Things are much more extreme in the Middle East than what we would find in the Western world, in the United States. And he said, you know, many would not even consider those American Muslims to really be true Muslims. And here, it's a different thing. So I'm going to put that in a category on a shelf over there and just tell you that that for me was an interesting aspect. And this is a tough, complicated issue. It goes all the way back to the beginning, and we know this. And so I just want to end this part, part one, with a quote from Elias Shakur, who I think sums it up beautifully. He was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize three times. He's from the area of Galilee. He's actually a Melkite Christian, and he wrote a book, Brother John, and I don't remember if I talked about this in the last podcast, but Brother John Michael Paul gave me this book. It's called Blood Brothers, kind of sets the table in a way that we might not otherwise see. It tells the story of their family living in their homeland and being brutally displaced in 1948 by Zionists. But Elias Shakur is known around the world for his peace and the olive branch that he's extended to all traditions and people, Arabs, Jews, and that's what he writes about. I think the way that he describes himself sums it up. He calls himself a Palestinian, Arab, Christian, Israeli. And this is what he says. He said, if there is a problem somewhere, this is what happens. Three people will try to do something concrete to settle the issue. 10 people will give a lecture analyzing what the three are doing. 100 people will commend or condemn the 10 for their lecture. 1,000 people will argue about the problem. And one person, only one, will involve himself so deeply in the true solution that he's too busy to listen to any of it. Now, which person are you? Now, in part two of our Holy Land pilgrimage recap, I want to talk about what happened to me in Jerusalem, being locked inside the Church of the Holy Sepulchre overnight, me along with four other pilgrims. Thank you to Brother John Michael Paul, and I'll tell you why. This is the place, the tomb of the resurrection of Christ, where he rose from the dead, Golgotha, the stone of unction where Christ's body was anointed. And so we're going to talk about that on the next episode, along with an update of our Choose Joy devotional and so much more. So lots to cover in number 123. Thank you again to my producer for his quick work and dynamic skills. Mark Cumming is a producer extraordinaire, and for all production needs, you can visit him at cumminghomestudio.com for any audio needs that you might have. Join me next time, friends, as we continue the journey through the sacred soil of Israel and explore the fifth gospel, the land itself, the stories contained in the hills, the desert, and the cities of the Holy Land. God bless you.